Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome to episode 172 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am so happy that you are joining me today for this amazing journey. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. Twice a week, you'll get an episode with the best and brightest Magic the Gathering players in the world, some of the minds behind Magic, as well as the top pros who share tips and tricks to help you level up your game. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, thank you. I really appreciate you being here and sharing the show with others. I love doing this for you and connecting with you. It's just been a blast. This journey has been so much fun. I do want to give a special thank you to the patrons. I really, really, really appreciate your support. mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can go to learn more about that. Basically, the patrons help keep the wheels greased. I'm almost able to cover the show notes and the audio editing that I hire out because I'm not good at those two things. But thankfully, the patrons make it possible. So thank you, thank you, thank you. As a way to give back, each and every month, I do a patron-exclusive giveaway. January just wrapped up not too long ago, so I'll be announcing the winner of the January giveaway very soon now, most likely next episode. So, patrons, thank you so much. You can go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon if you want to learn more about that. So, patrons, thank you so much for your support. I really, really appreciate it. You other prodigies out there, if that's a way that you choose to give back, awesome. Thank you so much. You don't have to. The show will go on. 2 episodes every week, no matter what. But if you do want to give back in that manner, mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can learn more and join the other awesome supporters there. So before we dive into today's interview, I do want to cover, of course, last weekend we had the Pro Tour. And boy, was it great. I mean, I love seeing past guests go on to do great things. And we had, in fourth place, Eduardo Sajigalic, which is one of my favorite past guests. I'm allowed to say that, I think, since I'm the host. He went off to grab the fourth place finish, and he was episode 87. So if you want to go back and hear his story, please, by all means. He, again, was one of my favorite past guests. So congratulations, Eduardo. Love seeing you go off and do so well. Also, Paolo Vitor Damo de Rosa took down sixth place. And he was a very early guest on the show, going all the way back to episode 9 and 10. So all the way back when I used to separate the interviews into two parts. Part 1 came out on Tuesday, part 2 came out on Friday, and Paolo was a guest way back then. So episode 9 and 10, if you want to hear his story, go ahead and look him up. Congratulations, of course, to all the other players. I'm definitely looking forward to inviting them onto the show and hearing their stories. I've already opened up talks with several of them, like Martin Yuza and Marcio Carvalho. So stay tuned to hear more great interviews from these amazing players. Well, that's really it for the top of the interview stuff. I'm super excited to have our guest join us. So without further ado, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest has several good finishes at many Magic events, but most notably is the champion of Grand Prix Prague in 2016. Coming to us from Madrid, Spain, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Rodrigo Tagores. Rodrigo, how are you doing today?
Very fine. Thanks for everyone listening to this.
Yeah, we are so happy to have you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, sure.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Rodrigo, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He is at TogoRestCG. That's how I'm going to break it down. So TogoRestCG. You can reach him on Twitter there, say thanks for being on the show, ask him questions. But yeah, Rodrigo, we just want to dive into you and your story and how you do what you do. But first, tell us a little bit about you outside of Magic. Are you born and raised in Madrid?
Yeah, I'm born and raised here. I work as video editor.
Okay.
And I studied in a German school my young years.
Excellent. Okay. So a video editor. Great. Now, do you have siblings that you play Magic with, or are you the only one?
No, I have an older sister, but she don't play Magic.
All right. Great. So you're out there in Madrid doing the video editing, you said, and obviously you do very well at Magic. So we're going to dive into that. We would love to hear your origin story. Like, when was the very first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards?
Also, I think the first time I saw cards was when 4th edition came out. My father had like board war games when he was younger, and he played with friends, and my mother gave him for his birthday Magic cards she got at a shop because it was cool and new and everything. And I look at them, but yeah, I was maybe 5 years older. So it was not so into it, but when I came to school, there were other kids that were playing these cards. And I said, oh, I had this at home. That was more or less about Mercadian masks. And I started playing. Then I stopped playing. Then I started playing again. Then I stopped playing again. And now I play since 2009 again.
Excellent. Excellent. That's so cool. So your mom got cards for your dad because your dad was into board games and stuff like that. That's really neat. And you saw them and then you saw them again at school and you're like, okay, so this is a thing. That's fun. So when you started playing, Mercadian Masks was your first set?
Yeah, I think Mercadian Mask, but I just played in the school, so nothing really great. I played Scarlet Worm and these kind of cards.
Nice, that's fun. So what has been your favorite set?
I think my favorite set is Urza Saga.
Okay.
Because it has really cool cards I like to play. But I have never played a standard match. But I think if I would choose a set to play forever, it would be Mercadian Mask because you can play... So Mercadian Mask, Urza Saga, because you can play all these cool combo decks.
Okay, awesome. Very fun. Now, along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
One of my favorite cards? So I like Brainstorm, but it's just because it's a card I have played a lot. I think Tendrils of Agony is one of my favorite cards. And Nalsum is also one of my favorite cards. Bargain.
Oh, yeah, Yawgmoth's Bargain. Yeah, okay.
I like black and drawing cards and killing people.
I noticed. So let's go with Tendrils of Agony. What is that card, for those of us who don't know? What does it do, and why do you like it?
Also, when I started playing the second time, I saw that this cool combo decks with Fastbond and Yawgmoth's Bargain, and they kill it with Tendrils because it was the best kill condition and still is one of the best kill conditions that you can have. And I started building this kind of decks and I think it's a cool card. Storm is a broken mechanic, but yeah.
So what is how much does it cost and what does the rules text say?
Ah, okay. The constant text. It costs black 2. It's a sorcery from Scorch, its name. And it says that target player loses 2 life and you gain 2 life and that it has Storm. So it gets copied for each spell played that turn before it.
Nice. So you only need to cast, unless they have life gain, you only need to cast like 10 spells and then that's it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Which is much easier to do in those older formats because you have the dark rituals and zero mana stuff and draw spells and Phyrexian mana and all kinds of craziness. So
yeah, at the end, you just, the main plan is to play a lot of cards which do nothing, but just add to playing more cards and then you just have to win. That's the good thing about this win condition, that you don't need infinite mana or infinite anything. You just have to do things.
Well, that's really neat. That is fun. Tendrils of Agony. Yeah, I've seen that card in a couple, like, I think, Legacy decks. So anyway, so that's pretty neat. So when you started getting serious about Magic, what was an aspect that you struggled with? What was something about Magic that you were terrible at, but that you eventually overcame?
Eventually overcame, I still haven't. I'm not pretty good at combat math.
Okay.
I'm still not pretty good at it, but usually I play in some formats creatures because, for example, in Legacy, you don't care about combat math because usually you are winning by a match or losing on the table, but something on draft or so, it's not easy for me. So I've done better, but not still.
Still working on it. Yeah, so you've mentioned a couple times, you know, combo decks. So is that what you prefer? You like doing combos?
Yeah, I like play most of the decks. So I play everything, but I like combo decks. I think they are more fun than other decks. You play other kind of game when you have to buy the opponent and make him counter your not important things or discard this. And then I hate when I play like creature decks that always my creatures get killed. That is not...
Doesn't feel good. What format was GP Prague?
GP Prague was Legacy, okay. The last Legacy GP that will be in Europe for now because they cancel it.
Interesting. What deck did you play?
I played Storm.
Okay. Duh. Awesome. So what have you done? So you mentioned that you prefer combo, but you do play a little bit of everything. Is it good to just kind of stick with what you know? You know, so you're a combo player and you're good at it, so you just take a combo deck every time? Or is it important to kind of branch out and learn other styles as well?
Usually I play a lot of decks. So I think the last 3 months, every day in my locals, I have played a different deck. From lands to shardless to blade to anything what you can think of, or I call it borrow. And I like to play everything, but sticking to your deck is good. And so you have to know your deck really, really good. And if you just played every day one full year, you are gonna be good with it. That is the best. Sometimes it comes a moment that you should play other decks just to know more about them, because sometimes you think in Legacy, your Shardless matchup with Storm is a bad matchup because they have Liliana, Deathrite Shaman, and Thoxize and every kind of discard. And then you see you play this game from the other side, and you see this deck does almost nothing. It's slow, has a few discards, but your Passing Flames is really strong, or even the Nauseam Kill is really strong because they don't push your life really fast. So, and this makes you know what they are doing. And that's a skill that should be improved by everyone.
Yeah, definitely. Playing other decks so you know how they work and how you can better fight against them when you play, you know, the deck that you're comfortable with, for sure. That's really neat. So when did you kind of break through? Like, was there a period of time or event that you did well at or something, and you were like, wow, like, I'm a pretty good player, I can move up to the next level? Maybe it was a GP or before, but when did you really feel that you improved or broke through as a Magic player?
So I have played cards since I was 10 years old or so. I stopped playing Magic to play other games, and I was quite good at them. So when I stopped playing and I came back to Magic, I was a good player. I won quite events, but I think the biggest event or moment is when in 2015, I won the Vintage Tournament in Italy. That was like the first big event that I won outside of my country. And that was some interesting stuff because, yeah, I was a good player in my city. People in my town, in my country knew me, but I think that was the best moment. And then I just keep chaining wins. That year I won really a lot of events.
Awesome. So what did you do leading up to there? How much were you playing? What did it look like as you prepared for and then finally made it to this Vintage tournament?
So, and I have a group of friends. We are like 10, 12 players. We play once a week. And then someone play more, someone play less. But some of them are pretty good. I play with them. Then I also play on Magic Online. And apart from this, sometimes I get to play 3 events each weekend, like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, depending on my time. If they are big events, or sometimes one, sometimes two, but there are weekends that I play 3 times each week, and I play Magic Online almost every day.
Love it. So you're playing a lot, and that's great. And it shows that, you know, you love your craft and you're getting into it and, you know, really learning. Like you said, if you played your deck every day for a year, you're just going to know it in and out and definitely be familiar with it. And we've definitely heard that consistently going to events and putting yourself in that, you know, that tournament mindset where you're playing against people that you don't know and just, you know, being in that environment is very helpful. So by doing, you know, 3 events a weekend, whether they're local or you have to travel a little bit for them, it really keeps your tournament skills sharp, I would think.
Yeah, so playing is quite important. Also, playing with people is quite important because I know players that only play Magic Online. And then when they get to a real life event, an event is really long, exhausting. You start at 8, 9 in the morning until late in the night. and the waiting, the playing there, it's much different than being in your home and just playing computer games while you are in underwear. That's
yeah,
that's quite different. And I think there are some players that are pretty good, but when the tournament starts going, their stamina, I think it's called, starts to decrease, and they start losing because they are tired. They are not used to be so many hours playing, even if they are good players. But you not only have to be a good player and have a good deck, you also need to be physically prepared to play 2 days of an event.
Right, right. Man, that is great advice. That's so, so true. And because everyone's journey is different. Some people play a lot online, and then some people play a lot in person. And sometimes that transition, you know, can be rough, like you said. And so I play mostly in person, you know, so I actually don't have a ton of like online skills yet or whatever, but I can definitely see how just getting used to the long days, like you said, can be totally different for players. And so on the topic of journeys, you know, we all go through Magic and we all have a journey with highs and lows, but our highs and lows are unique to each player, right? And so we want to dive into 2 moments. The first one for you being your worst Magic moment. Take us there. Tell us that story. What was your worst Magic moment? And more importantly, what did you learn from that experience?
My worst Magic moment, usually I don't remember the games pretty often, what I did, but I remember the games that were somehow important to me, and I punted. We traveled to the USA to play in a Star City Games, and I lost my win and in against Jim Davis because I miscounted by 1. I think he should be dead. And that was quite a weird scenario, but I had the kill. That was not the perfect kill, but giving the how the game played out and how the game was gonna play out, I should have go for it. And I miscounted, thinking that only if he plays wrong, I win. But I had a deterministic kill, and this is on video. So I have watched it a few times, and I regretted quite a lot.
Oh my goodness. So you miscounted the damage by 1?
Yeah, I thought he was I don't remember right. He was at 18 or 20 or something. I had to make Storm 9 or Storm 10.
Okay.
And I thought I was 1 short, where I wasn't.
Got it. So you needed 1 more storm counter, 1 more storm count.
Yeah, and I had it, but I didn't, I counted the spells I could cast this turn, and for some reason I missed it 1, and I had it. So yeah, that was a pretty sad moment.
Yeah, so what did you take away from that? How did you learn? How did you grow? How did you move past that to be a better Magic player?
So from there, I think that you get to know that you should always think twice when you play anything, because I don't play much. I don't think much when I'm playing. I'm most of a muscle skill player. I just somehow I know what I have to do most of the times. I don't know why, but I think, oh, now I have to play this. Now I have to play this. And sometimes I don't think through and I lose. And also sometimes I think too much and I lose because of it. Because, for example, when my feeling says my opponent has a card, a weird card that he maybe plays 0 and 1, but it something says, oh, he has this in hand. But then I say, no, it's the chance that he has it, it's really low. Then I usually do the mental play that is the right play, but at the end my feeling was right and he had the card. I could have played to play around it. And I always try when my feeling says my opponent has something to hear it, but sometimes it's hard and I lose because of it.
Wow. But that's really neat that you have that intuition. And, you know, it's really good to hear that you learned to kind of think twice, think through a couple of your turns. Because, you know, other players like you who are able to just kind of instinctively go and play this, play that, can benefit from taking the time to think and to kind of, you know, map out a few lines of play. But like you said, sometimes your intuition is right. And, you know, they have the card and you just go, wow, like, look at that. So that's really interesting. So on the flip side of our lows are our highs. And we would love to hear your proudest Magic moment to date.
So I think the best moment was to win the GP, because it was also the finals was also a great game, even if I punted, but somehow got to win. And yeah, that was really, so I started out crying literally there because I didn't believe I won a GP. So I was going there like, oh, okay, I would like to make day two. I have played a lot, tested a lot, but I have played quite a few legacy GPs. And I have never made day two. Most of them, I miss the last round or so. In the modern GPs, I have made multiple times day two. But in Legacy, sometimes happened always. Like I was playing Show and Tell, and I played Reanimator 3 times or so. But I just wanted to make day two, and I ended up winning the event by getting really lucky.
That's incredible. That's incredible. So what did that mean for you? How did that feel to win?
Also, yeah, it's great. I got to go to a Pro Tour, even if it was not so good, because I wanted to play a modern Pro Tour, because I don't play Standard or Draft. But yeah, being one time in a Pro Tour is really great. Like, it's different. Everyone is playing quickly. Everyone is more or less nice. And everyone knows what they are doing. They are good Magic players. Usually you don't have problems because everyone is great.
That's awesome. And so which Pro Tour did you go to?
I went to Pro Tour Honolulu in October last year.
Yeah.
And I did really bad.
Oh, and that was your first and only Pro Tour so far?
Yeah, and I hope I don't go to anyone. Never.
Really? You don't want to go to another one?
No, I play Magic because I enjoy playing. And having to test for Standard, having to test for Draft, which is something I don't like to play usually, it's not the best in the world. Like, if the world be a modern Pro Tour, I will want to go. I also playing this year the World Magic Cup qualifiers, because the World Magic Cup was modern, and then I lost in the top four, but yeah, it's fine. And then, but I will not play a tournament for if the win is to play a Standard tournament.
Got it. Well, that's neat. That just shows that everybody enjoys Magic on different levels, you know? And so there are listeners, there are prizes out there who are like you, you know, that they have their format that they enjoy. They know that, they recognize that, and that's okay. You know, they're not trying to go to every Pro Tour or whatever. They want to play what they enjoy. For you, it's like Legacy, for example, and for others, it may be whatever format happens to be. But that's really neat. And I love the honesty, transparency, and that you're sharing with us that, hey, you know, I like these formats, and if going to Pro Tour means Standard, then it's not for me. And that's totally fine. I think that you can still go to the events that you enjoy and do well at them. And you can still be an inspiration. You know, like, you inspire us by doing what you do and sticking to your formats and placing well at your events. And that's why we have you here. So thank you so much for your journey and for your courage and for your story. I think that's great.
Yeah.
What does your preparation look like? So let's say, first of all, what other Legacy events are you going to be able to go to if there's no more Legacy GPs in Europe?
So now they have changed it for the Eternal Weekend.
Okay.
There was before the Eternal Weekend in the US, but now we don't have a Legacy GP, but we have the Eternal Weekend event, which is just a Legacy and Vintage weekend to play, which makes more sense because most of the Legacy players don't care about going to the Pro Tour. So you end in a tournament where the players are not the usual grinders who play Standard and so to get pro points and play Magic, but you play against people who like and love Legacy and Eternal format. Also, the prize is quite similar because they give you a painting that costs, at the end, you get like $8,000. When a GP win, it's $10,000.
Yeah.
And yeah, they give it in different, they give it as a painting and not as money, which is also better for them. And yeah, it's different. Sometimes playing a legacy GP is great. We will travel to play the legacy GP in Las Vegas this year.
Oh, right. Yes, of course.
But having this kind of event is quite okay. If we get to play the Eternal Weekend, we don't really miss the GP.
The GP. Okay, neat. So what does your preparation look like? So by this point, you are obviously, you know your deck or maybe a couple and you're really comfortable with it. But when you are preparing for a legacy event, what do you do to prepare and what advice can you give to other players as they prepare for their legacy events?
So you have to know your deck. You have to know what you are going to face. That's quite important because most of the people don't know, look at other players' deck lists. But you should, like, if you're playing a legacy event, go to MTG Goldfish or something like this and look more or less the core of every deck, like how much removal they have, how much counter magic they have, what are the usual cards they have in the sideboard. And that's maybe you need a few hours to do this. But if you do it, and you more or less learn what's the game plan of this deck against you, you are going to get a big reward because you're going to see, oh, now they are not playing this card or now they are, or this deck is going to sideboard like so because they play this card in the sideboard. And that's a great advantage when you are playing.
Yeah, so definitely do your research and just know the other decks, like you said, and that gives you an advantage because you won't be completely blindsided when people do stuff against you. That's really neat. So as you've played in all these events in various formats, and you've obviously played against lots of different kinds of people and just seen and observed a lot, what's the biggest mistake that you see players make?
And so usually, I think players do play cards before they short. They give free information. Like if, for example, you have a Delver and your opponent has mana up, and then you have a removal in hand or even a land or even anything, and you play this before attacking, then you're giving free information to your opponent to take decisions, which is quite, maybe they didn't know that you had done a removal and then you could attack with the Delver and they were not going to kill it because they could swing back and win. But maybe they are now see that you killed his Tarmogoyf with Abrupt Decay. They say, oh, no, my clock is less good. I'm going to kill the Delver. And that's 3 less damage that you got. That is sometimes something that happens a lot, that people give information for free before it should be relevant by not sequencing right their turns or their plays.
So how can we avoid that mistake? Because that makes sense. You know, you're giving away free information by doing things too early or out of order. So what can we do to get better at that?
So I always think if it changes, if you play this card after doing other things that you are going to do anyway, and thinking if it's maybe it changed nothing, but the information you give your opponent, maybe you don't care. Maybe if it's a cantrip, you play it yearly before you could draw into something different. But most of the things you can wait until end of combat to don't give information. Also, I think people play too slow when they should know that the opponent can't do anything. Like, I'm going to do this, like, pa-pa-pam. My opponent, for example, you are playing standard, and your opponent is tap it, and then you do everything slowly and ask and do when your opponents are, like, no choice to interact with you, and then you lose time.
Yeah, and the flip side of that is when you're all tapped out, or your opponent's all tapped out, and, like, they take forever to, like, I don't know, let something resolve or pass a turn or just something that also bugs me, because I'm like, you're just wasting time. You know, like, you are completely tapped out. You have absolutely nothing to do. Like, you can't interact with me at all. And yet you're like dragging this out. So, yeah. So it goes both ways. I totally agree. That's very interesting. Now, what about land drops? Do you suggest putting a land pre-combat, or is that information that you want to keep to yourself as well?
So it depends. And what's your plan, what you can do. For example, today they wrote in the Channel Fireball an article about a game with Patrick Chapin and Shaha Shenar, where Chapin had like a 3 life and a Monastery Whisper just played, and an Issa Charm in hand. And he was like a 3 life for a few turns. Shahar had 2 treasure crews, but no blue mana. The biggest problem there is Shahar drew a land, a fetch land, and he played it. So now, instead of killing the goblin guide Shahar had with the Ether Charm, he jump block it, and then Shahar casted the treasure crew, and he could play the Ether Charm on it. And all this play changed because he played the land, because Chapin now he has access to treasure crease. If I let this treasure crease resolve, I'm gonna lose, so better I jump and just counter it. And that was quite relevant there.
So in that case, Shahar, he played the land pre-combat, attacked, Shapen chump blocked, and then post-combat, he cracked the land and went for the cruise, and Shapen countered it. When in reality, so it, the other way, if he would have done it after the fact, then the blocks might have been different, and the Izzet Charm might have been used up.
Yeah, maybe the Izzet Charm will go to the Goblin Guide.
Yeah.
To kill it, because he had 4 lands, so if it drew any other burn spell, the Ace Charm was not going to counter it.
Right.
So the only card that he could counter was Treasure Cruise. And that was a really important play on this. So I remember after this game, Chapin got an interview, and he told that this land drop Shahar Shenar made before combat was really a move that made him win the game when he would have lost mm-hmm. other ways.
Interesting. So it goes back to what you said, which is it all depends, or rather you need to think about, okay, does it make a difference? Does it matter if I play this now or play it later? Because if you can play it later, do. Like, for example, I always think, well, you know, if I have more land up during my combat phase, then my opponent might think that I have more things to do, and it'll cause them to think and use some mental energy. So I always want them to think that I have more options, you know? And so I was like, oh, I should play the land beforehand. But that's not always the case. Like you said, you can maybe look at your hand and say, oh, hey, you know, I need this other land to counter their removal spell or whatever, in which case definitely play it because you want to protect your creature. But if you can do what you need to do during combat with the lands that you have, then maybe you wait, maybe you save it, especially if it's, you know, your third color or you know, some kind of information that that could be used later. I really like that. I think it comes back to what you said, which is think about whether or not you need to make this play right now, if it matters, and if it doesn't, do it later. Play as late as possible when it matters.
Yeah.
Love it. That's really cool. I'm glad you broke that down, and I'm glad you brought up that example because that really helps illustrate the point. So that's awesome. So great. So we talked about the biggest mistake that you've seen players make and how we can avoid that. So I also want to dive into what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to take to other aspects of your life?
That's a hard question. I think the being able to travel while traveling a lot, that to organize myself and to like book a hotel or an apartment, find food. And that's something that I always have used in my life because it's a skill that you get from playing Magic because you travel a lot. But then you go with not Magic playing friends who don't travel as much. And then you know how to do all these things that you need in when you are traveling, and you are used to it, like airports. Airports is quite not so cool thing because you have to pass out the security things, and that is quite stressing when you don't go a lot. Like, and when you play for Magic, then you get that skill. And I think that could be an answer.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like yes, you know, and I love hearing all the different things. You know, so some people, you know, they pull out technical things. Some people pull out communication or interpersonal things. This is a great one. Like, because you've traveled so much for Magic, you've gained those skills, like booking flights, going through airports, getting apartments, because you do it so often and now you're comfortable with it. And like you said, when you travel with non-Magic friends who don't travel as much, you can see the difference. So that, I mean, that's awesome. That is a skill that's very worthwhile, that's very relevant to the real world, that you gain and hone from traveling so much with Magic. I think that's awesome. Absolutely awesome. So along the lines of learning, to kind of turn it inwards on you, what have you learned about yourself? What's the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
Also from myself, I think that it does, you should not care what others say about you if you know yourself. So sometimes people say that you don't do things right, or they don't like your way of being or maybe playing. But if you are fair to yourself, you should not care about this, because always when you are like a bit more famous player, everyone likes to talk. Internet is pretty anonymous, and you should care yourself and don't care what people you don't care about say.
So true. So if you could go back in time, say 5 years, Rodrigo, what advice would you give yourself knowing what you know now?
I would sure say that how I will not lose against Jim Davis in that win and in match. But that's not so relevant. I think, I don't know much. That I think I don't regret many things in my life. I usually carry what I do. I know what I do. I know what I did. And I assume it happened for some reason. So I don't almost not regret anything in my life, anything.
Well, good for you. That's a really good perspective, a good outlook on life for sure. So we've talked about how Legacy is your best format. Is that right?
Yeah, I play Legacy, Vintage, and Modern.
Okay, excellent. So those Eternal formats for sure. So what? Now we talked about reviewing. We talked about how to prepare for Legacy event. You know, reviewing your other deck list and being familiar with it. But what other advice would you have for new-ish Legacy players? You know, people who wanna, because to me, for example, it's really intimidating because I think it's really expensive and yada, yada, yada. So I haven't played a lot. So what advice would you give to newer Legacy players in addition to what you've shared before?
So Legacy is not so expensive. There are quite a lot of decks that cost not so much. Like, I think the Dredge deck is like $200 or less.
Wow, okay.
And maybe it's not the coolest deck in the world. Maybe you go after you play it as your only deck 3 times in locals, people start playing more sideboard for you and you don't win as many matches. But the good thing about it is this kind of cards never lose value. So if you invest into them, when you don't want to play more Legacy, you are going to sell it almost for the same number, or for the same cash that you got it. And then you can slowly buy into other decks while you play one and learn the format. So when you get to play another deck, you will have some knowledge of the other decks. And it's a really a fun format where you usually don't get mana screwed or mana flute by yourself.
That's a really good point, that the cards maintain their value so you can, you know, sell a deck and buy into another one fairly easily. So that's not that's encouraging. I have a friend who really likes Legacy, but I just haven't been able to break into it yet. So that's awesome. So do you have any daily rituals or things that you do on a regular basis that you feel helps lead to your success?
Also, on a regular basis, no, but I have some things that I do in events, like between rounds.
What's that?
I always go to the bathroom.
Yes, that's smart.
Just, even if I don't want to go much, because if you are later in the round catch up by needing to go, that's not really cool for your concentration. Also, this I drink a lot of water, and that makes that I will have to go to the bathroom more often, because your brain needs water to work, and yeah, and at events, your brain is almost the thing that you use the most.
Yes. I do the same thing. Between every round, I will go and fill up my water bottle because I probably drink it during the round, and then go to the restroom. Like I do the same thing between every single round. That's what I do. So, and then I'll, obviously, you know, I grab some snacks and other stuff like that. But those are, that's something that I always do. That's awesome. That's really cool. I have absolutely loved, you know, learning from you. And where are you going to be in the future? Do you have, are you going to be going, you mentioned the Legacy event in Vegas. Are you going to any other events, or is it all just local stuff?
No, the way... We go in March. We have two events here in Europe. We have an MKM series that is Legacy, Modern, and Vintage. And then 2 weeks after, the 1st of April, we have the Eternal Weekend in Paris.
Nice. And
there are some other events like Frankfurt and I don't know yet more.
Okay. Well, that's great. We love watching past guests go off and do great things. So good luck on all your events coming up for sure. Prodigies out there, as a reminder, if you want to connect with Rodrigo, the best place to do that is on Twitter. And I know that I kind of butchered it at the beginning, but looking at it now, I understand how it is. He's at Togores TCG. So Togores, T-O-G-O-R-E-S. So that's his last name. So at Togores TCG. So you can find him on Twitter. Say thanks for being on the show. Ask him a question. And that's the best place to connect with him. So Rodrigo, when we part here, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
I thank everyone for hearing this show. And I please ask everyone to not pile shuffle. I hate pile shuffle. It's just a waste of time. And it doesn't shuffle your deck.
Love it. Rodrigo, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. We've learned a lot. We've grown a lot. And we're very grateful for you for that. You are a hero among planeswalkers. And it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious. Thank you, Rodrigo, so much for coming on to the show. I learned a lot. Prodigies, I hope you did as well. As always, you can find the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Rodrigo Togores. There you'll find a synopsis of everything that we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. Before we wrap up, I do want to mention again the awesome Pro Tour we had over the weekend. The standard metagame has taken one more step forward now that we got to see what the pros have put together. Moving forward, people are either going to be playing the best deck or trying to come up with a deck to beat the best deck. So keep that in mind as you enter your standard events moving forward. Kudos to anybody who had a Mardu Vehicles deck built from before, because you're in pretty good shape now. I'll definitely be inviting the Pro Tour Top 16 players onto the show, so definitely stay tuned to hear more great stories from these awesome players on how they do what they do. And finally, I want to give one more thank you to the patrons. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your support. It really means a lot to me. I look forward to announcing the winner of January's giveaway here shortly. And if you're interested in becoming a patron, you go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon and learn more about that. If you want to get back to the show, but becoming a patron isn't where you're at right now, that's totally cool. Share the show with a friend. That really means a lot to me when you have your Magic buddies that you play with and you say, hey, I listen to this show. I get a lot of value out of it. I think you will too. And expanding the listenership is one of the best ways that you can help give back. Because again, the goal here, what I really want to do is I want to help 1,000 players qualify for the Pro Tour. And so I'm still waiting for that first listener turned guest. I think we're getting close. I'm really excited for that. But we're not going to stop there. We're going to get 1,000 players to the Pro Tour. I really believe that you can be one of them. So share with a friend, apply what we learn here in these interviews, and get out there and have some fun. Thank you so much for joining me today. We're calling it a wrap for now. I cannot wait to connect with you again in the next episode. Until then, I am Sean of the Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.